Oh hey, I'm glad you're here. Growing up in a video store, my whole world was compartmentalized. If I wanted to feel sad, drama section. Want to feel scared? Horror section. Want to not understand what's happening and also see robots? Science fiction. Want to know that Barry likes Party Animal, Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers, and Vice Squad? Employee picks. But my favorite section as a kid was definitely the comedy section. There's something about walking along the rows and seeing Spaceballs and The Burbs and Weird Science. These wonderful little films that would just brighten up my day, and I could watch them over and over and over again and find little gems and funny things to share on the playground. And I'd seen Eddie Murphy in Beverly Hills Cop. I knew he was a funny actor, but then one day I saw a VHS tape on the shelf that said Eddie Murphy Raw. And it was just him. He's holding a microphone. And I'd seen people tell jokes on Johnny Carson, but I didn't know what they were called, that they had a name, that it was a job, that someone would stand in front of a crowd and attempt to give all of these strangers the gift of laughter, to tie everyone in the room together in a moment of joy through just references and stories. Which brings us to today's episode. But before we get to that, I want to say sincerely thank you for listening. Thank you for rating it, for reviewing it, for sharing these stories. This project has really meant a lot to me. And this is the last episode of season one. We've already got a couple recorded for season two. We're going to take a brief break. We have a couple surprises. And then we'll resume season two with all new guests and all new films. But today, we're talking about The Dark Backward. The guest is a stand-up comedian, and this is VHS. Hello, and welcome to VHS. I'm your host, Dirk Marshall, and I'm joined in the studio today by Sean Jordan.
Yeah, I can talk?
Yes, you can talk.
Hell yeah. I'm happy to be here. This is one of the coolest rooms I've ever been in my whole life.
Well, thank you.
Just for everybody listening.
You're a stand-up comedian.
I am.
And that's why I asked you to be here and for us to discuss the movie, which we will eventually get to. But first, people can find out more about you at your website, seanjordancomedy.com.
They can. You're so much better at this than I am. Yeah.
I don't know about that. You are Sean Cougar Mellon Jordan on Instagram.
I am.
Sean S. Jordan on Twitter.
Uh-huh.
And Sean Jordan on Facebook.
Yeah. You always forget about the Facebook one.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm Sean Jordan on Facebook.
There's a certain demographic that needs to know about the Facebook.
My mom.
There. I hope she's listening.
Dog. That's about the only reason I have the book anymore is because she always hits me up. Like, yeah. That's her form of communication. Anyway.
And you just released your first comedy album, The Buck Starts Here.
I did.
Congratulations
on
that.
Thank
you. How does that feel, having that out?
Awesome. I mean, it's like, you know, I've never done anything before. Like, put anything out in the world, and then you can just go onto iTunes, and there it is. I can just see it. So it feels really cool.
Yeah.
And a kid I grew up with did the artwork. His name's Shane Schroeder. So that was real fun, getting to, like, you know, you get to have, like, a record label pay your friend, and you're like, tie it, dude.
Is your Shane Schroeder?
Yeah, Shane Schroeder.
Does he have a website, or?
Gosh, yeah, it's just Shane Schroeder on Instagram. I'm pretty sure that's what it is, but he's great. He lives in South Dakota. Amazing artist.
Awesome.
So, yeah, look him up. He's dope.
I love that.
Yeah, man.
And you're also an integral part of a very successful podcast, All Fantasy Everything.
I like to think I'm a big part of it, yeah.
I don't think anyone would do that at all.
Yeah, man.
And for anyone that doesn't know what that is, could you quickly maybe break down what the podcast sort of format is?
I could. We do a fantasy draft of things that aren't sports, even though sports works its way in sometimes, but, like, you know, horror movies or, fight scenes in movies or the Taco Bell menu.
Right. That was great.
Pretty much anything.
Perfect. And if
Tom Hanks movies the other day.
I just listened to it today.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah, man. It was a fun one. It's tricky.
My wife was like, who's coming by today? And I was like, Sean Jordan. She's like, is that who you're listening to right now? And I was like, yeah.
That's funny.
That's true. But I've heard every episode. I'm a huge fan. And in case that didn't make it crystal clear, as long as you haven't signed an NDA, non-drafting agreement.
What?
I thought
yeah, dude.
Maybe we could do a mini draft right now. Just three quick rounds.
Yeah.
If you're game.
I'm definitely game.
Okay. I think you'll be more game when I tell you the subject.
Okay. I've always wanted to do this just like off top, like have an audience, like do a live one, an audience member pick and then just do it. It just seems fun. So yeah, let's.
Well, here's a subject that I think is near and dear to both of our hearts.
Okay.
We're going to draft top things we appreciate about Ian Carmel.
Yeah, I can definitely do that.
Okay, perfect.
For sure.
And we'll just do three picks, and you can have first pick as you're the guest.
Okay. I appreciate that he is my best friend. He has done, I could go on I could go on forever.
That's why I limited it to three.
Yeah, yeah. That's he's the just done. Part. He's done so much for me that I can't even, you know, you can't even like repay.
Sure.
I mean, he's the only reason I get to live in LA. So, just to sum it up, that's my first pick.
Okay. So what was that?
Just that he's my best friend.
Right. Got it.
That's what I appreciate about him.
That is, well.
It's a broad, but yeah. You know, just that he's.
Yeah.
That's it. That's my first one.
I'm going to go with, he's a great joke writer.
God damn right he is.
Yeah. And I always knew he was funny just from the first time I met him in college. But when he was on sports, the ball.
Yeah, when he was on Talking Ball?
Talking Ball.
Mm-hmm.
So I will watch anything that he does. I'm that way for any of my friends that do things creatively. I like to root for people.
I do too. I mean, I watch the Tonys. Because he wrote it. You know, I'm like, that's what I... It's fun. Yep. It's fun knowing that you have somebody who's a part of something.
Yeah. And my favorite thing about how he can craft jokes is he will make a joke about sports, which I don't know things about. I've tried to get into it. It just wasn't something that spoke to me. But I still find the jokes funny because of how it's crafted. I don't know who the person is or the number he's saying. That's. I mean, I know the number, but I don't know the person related to the number.
Yep.
I'm not like 16. I gotta look this up. But I also really appreciate the sports talk that you guys have as a group on your podcast. And so I wrote a couple sports talks of my own just to see how they work.
Okay.
Bramble slaps a flaming pigeon, but there's too many Gregories at the watering hole. That's my first one.
Yeah.
Okay. And then Johnson and Rhetoric spot a gazebo, but it looks like the curds and whey aren't available for shipping outside of Missouri. It's a little long, that one.
These are fun sports. I want to know the sports that we're playing, but yeah.
I was just picturing basketball the whole time.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I'm in.
Yeah. It just seems like people just yes and any sentence that someone says, you know, that they just pick nouns and verbs and then people just go, yep, that's a good one. That's what he was doing. Your episode where there's the dunking, things to say when you dunk.
Sure.
Yeah. Pretty amazing.
That was such a weird thing to draft. We were all just like, this is weird.
Yeah.
It was fun.
You
could
feel it. And there was some great stuff in there as usual.
He's just a ridiculous, like naturally funny. It's just, it's almost not fair.
So your second pick?
My second pick would be his... restaurant selection.
Ooh.
Yeah, he's really good at that. Like, he's the first one that ever took me out to Dim Sum. You ever had Dim Sum?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Never even heard of it before, obviously, from South Dakota.
They're like, what the fuck they don't have that there?
No.
Just Chislic.
Just Chislic and, like, deer jerky.
Yes,
so he took me out to 82nd, whatever that Dim Sum spot is, and I was like, I don't know what to do, man. He just ordered by pointing, pretty much.
Right.
And he now, like, every... I don't know, whenever we're all in town, like we're all in LA, we'll go to, we'll just find a dinner and we leave it to him to make the reservation. He always orders the food. A lot of times he ends up getting the check. I'd like to be able to step in, but like, it's getting to the point where I can step in and help.
Yeah.
Now, but like, he's very good at organizing a dinner, and that is a rare quality.
Yeah, that is excellent.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with, he always makes time for his friends.
Yeah.
Like, I knew Ian a long time ago, and I only get to see him maybe once every 6 years or something. But I can text him at any point, and more often than most people, he's available.
Yeah.
You know? And I just think that that's pretty amazing, and it really speaks to a person's character that, like...
For sure.
You know, it's not like we live together or anything, but I still have the opportunity to be like, you know, hey, what's up, or, you know... Whatever the situation is.
Yeah, he's good about it. I mean, it's easy. I've seen it happen. I do it sometimes where you just get not even busy. You just get a little, you check in your car.
Yep.
And you're like, and then you just forget that you got a text. And then like 4 days later, you're going through your email and you're like, God damn it. You seem like such a dick. He's really good about just like
so
on the hop with it.
Yeah. Yeah. So your third pick.
I like that he's got me more into basketball. I've always, so skateboarding has always been what I've loved, but basketball, I've always wanted to be knowledgeable, and because I love it, I've always thought it looks so cool, it just is so cool, so much style, and being, like, living with him, he took me to, I got to sit courtside at a game, and I was like, holy buckets, dude, so just the love of basketball, and he's a good sports fan, he never gets upset, like, you know, you go out, and, like, dudes want to fight. It's just crazy. He's just a good, solid sports fan. Loves the Blazers. Would do anything for him. But then when the season's done, it's done. He doesn't carry anything home. So good sports fan and got me into basketball.
That's awesome.
Yeah, man.
My last pick, I'm going to go with his family are all dope.
Yeah,
and that's super awesome. Still to this day, one of my favorite sounds is Saint Sue Carmel, as she referred to on the podcast. Mm-hmm. Her laugh, when Ian and I were in like improv things, and she would, of course, be in the audience because she's such a big fan of her.
She's awesome son. There. She's so cool.
I love it. And being in a scene with her son and mm-hmm. getting a laugh from his mom mm-hmm. is like, I mean, it's huge. Like, it just, it's, I just appreciate it so much. They're lovely people. And so
his sister's his brother. Yeah. They rule. Yeah. So I've gotten, because a couple times in Portland, I didn't have anything to do on holidays.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't have a girlfriend and all my friends would go home and I didn't have any friends from Sioux Falls that lived here. So Ian was like my, you know, person I was closest with. And yeah. he'd just bring me, it's like, come on, having dinner with us. Thanksgiving with the Carmels. I'm like, fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah.
I was sick.
That's awesome.
They're amazing.
Well, we left a lot on the board.
No, we didn't.
Oh, okay. We covered everything.
That's it for him.
I didn't mention his good looks, but it was. I was going to.
He mentions them enough.
Okay, great. Perfect.
The shoes. I like the shoes. I like that he's into shoes. That's yeah, fun. It's always fun when someone's like smart. Actually into shoes. And he wears them. He's been on this lately. He's like, shoes are made for wearing.
Right.
And he's right. You get a nice pair of shoes, but wear them.
Yeah. Don't just put them up on your shoe mm-hmm. caddy.
Yeah, I mean, we left a million things on the table. I was trying to be broad and not get deep and not cry. But
sure.
There's
I wasn't things. Trying to get you to cry either. Yeah. I just thought, what a great thing to get
I didn't drink
talk
last
about.
Night, so it's a little harder to get me to cry.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
When you're hungover, you're a little more emotional.
Cool. That's true. That is true. But I didn't bring you here just to draft the amazing qualities of Ian Carmel, although we could.
We could. We could also talk about that freestyle board over there, too.
Oh.
That's tight.
That's
room just got so much cooler.
Thanks. That's Ronnie Mullen.
I didn't even see that down there.
Yeah. I should have it facing the other way because my grandma put rails on it.
Yeah.
So the graphics on the bottom are pretty pristine.
It's a freestyle board down there for everybody listening. It's a little different than a normal board. It's got shorter nose and tail, so you could like pressure flip it, and that's like a pogo stick kind of situation. Anyway,
I could never do that, but I watched many a Rodney Mullen video where mm-hmm. he did things. I even showed my daughter. I waited until she was like 4 or something, and then showed her Rodney Mullen videos, which, I mean, to her, anything's magic, so she didn't quite understand the feats he was accomplishing.
Anybody out there, watch Rodney Mullen's Secondhand Smoke.
Intro
to that part. The rest of it, that's not the freestyle, it probably won't resonate, but the freestyle stuff, it always amazes everybody, so watch that if you get a chance. YouTube it right now.
Right. Yes. I mean, maybe wait, but...
Well, wait until we're done.
Yeah. But we're also brought here together by the film The Dark Backward. was this a first-time watch for you?
What a funny name. And just ridiculous everything about the movie.
Yeah, that's very true.
It's, how'd you find it?
Okay, so I grew up in a mom and dad video store. So I was exposed to all of these strange individual voices of film, and I absorbed them all at the same time. So I wasn't looking at comedies or actions or anything. So I just would disappear into these little unique worlds. And this was one of the ones that I came across a little bit older. But it was so completely singular,
dude,
that I was like, if
I... Wayne Newton?
Yeah.
James Caan?
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy, the people that they got to be in there. Who else? Bill Paxton?
Oh, yeah. So we're going to...
Laura Flynn Boyle?
Yeah. This is... You memorized all of them.
It must have been like her first movie. Well, it's just amazing to me that all these people... And I never heard of that movie ever.
Here's one. Yeah. I mean, we could have talked any movie with
Judd
a stand-up
Nelson,
comedian.
Right? He was the comic?
Yes. Like, we could have talked about The Lockers, but, like, everyone's seen Punchline.
Not
so
everybody has seen, which is
true.
A bummer.
That's true.
See Punchline. It's
yeah,
crazy.
Do see it.
Very unrealistic.
But to put this in context, we'll start with just the director, Adam Rifkin. He wrote this when he was 19.
Okay. What else? Has he done anything else?
Oh, yeah. So he directed it when he was 23. This was his first script. His first film was A Tale of Two Sisters in 1989. That was a movie based on poems by Charlie Sheen. I have not seen this. But
man.
It sounds crazy.
Yeah, that's another... That would be so crazy to watch. Or
so,
fun.
Yeah, so he did The Dark Backward in 91, Psycho mm-hmm. Cop Returns in 93, and then most notably, Detroit Rock City in 1999.
That movie fucking rules.
He wrote Underdog, Mouse Hunt, and Small Soldiers.
Small Soldiers was fantastic.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Mouse Hunt. Underdog, it's been forever.
Oh, and the last movie he did was 2017, The Last Movie Star, which was Burt Reynolds' last film.
I don't think
it's
I ever
nice
saw it.
It's a nice little heartfelt film.
I bet it is.
Yeah. Actors, we got Judd Nelson.
Yeah, dude. Breakfast Club. And what else? There was another big one that Judd Nelson was in. I mean, you know he did.
Oh, there's a lot. But before we get to that, mm-hmm. I want to tell you about how he got the film.
Okay.
So he got the script from Adam Rifkin. And then Adam Rifkin said no to Judd Nelson.
How'd you get the script?
The script just went to a producer person and then found its way to Judd. So yeah, Judd's like,
I don't want Judd.
I'm going to play the part. He says, no, you can't do it. You're like kind of like a, he was sort of a bad guy at the time, you know, in films. And he wanted something sort of meek. So Judd said, I can do it. And so he said, write me 10 minutes of stand-up material. And he went to, Judd Nelson went to comedy clubs and performed 10 minutes of not great stand-up material.
Dude, it's so funny watching an actor. They do it all the time.
Oh.
Famous people, they're like, hey, we can do stand-up. And you're like, it's harder than you think.
But it was working because he was Judd Nelson. People are like, oh, it's the guy from the Brat Pack. So then he put on complete clown makeup and would go up and do the act in between celebrity, you know, I mean, famous comedians.
Just take the salt and pepper out so people, like, had to listen.
And it worked because they thought he was doing anti-comedy. So then they were like, okay, this isn't going to work. So they had to go to, like, Culver City.
Yeah.
And he walked on stage, and he'd only performed as the character with the mic in a mic stand. And the mic stand was in the far corner in the dark. So they handed him a mic, and he didn't know what to do. So Judd Nelson just walked to the far end of the stage, stood in the dark, put the mic in the stand, and started the performance.
That's pretty tight.
And the audience did not know what to think. There was not a peep. Nobody booed. Everyone was confused. And they were like, okay, you get the part.
Nice.
Yeah.
See, that's a fun story.
Yeah.
Hearing somebody, because doing stand-up would be a lot scarier, I think, even for famous people.
Ugh.
You see them, you've seen, like, actors or actresses get up.
Yep.
And they're doing it, and you can tell they're eating shit, and they know it.
Yeah.
And they can't, there's no way out. You can't do anything.
Well, because it appears like something anyone could do.
Wow.
And that's why people are always like, I'm funny, I could do it. But then you see people go up, and it's like, oh, like the air in the room changes, you know?
Well, that's the thing. When you make something look easy, it's to the detriment. It looks easy. Like if someone's running a marathon and they don't look tired, you're like, I could do that. I can run.
Right.
And, you know, you cannot. It's you have to, I mean, anybody can do it, but you have to work at it and you have to.
Exactly. Know. There's like an incredible art form.
Just because you're like gorgeous doesn't mean you can do it, you know?
Right. You'll get some mileage out of those
you
things.
You will. But you will. You get a little bit of grace.
But Judd Nelson did Fandango in 85, Breakfast Club in 85, St. Elmo's Fire in 85.
St. Elmo's Fire.
Yeah. Relentless in 89, which was one of my favorites. He's like a psycho killer.
Never seen it.
New Jack City in 91.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Was he the goatee guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big Suits.
Yeah, yeah. We just watched that.
Yeah.
Well, like 6 months ago.
And The Dark Backward in 91. Both those films, same year.
Man.
Yeah.
Colorful year for that guy.
Airheads in 94.
Airheads.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So. And he's done a ton of other things, but I'm just talking around the time of the film.
New Jack City, that's so funny.
Bill Paxton, who is, I usually say people come in at 11 when they have high energy in films. He's like a 28 or something. It's ridiculous. The whole film, he's wild. He was in The Terminator playing a punk leader in 1984.
I know.
Weird Science in 85.
God, Chet.
Yep.
You're stewed, butt wad.
Commando in 85. Aliens in 86.
In Aliens, he's such a dork.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
Because you look, it's funny watching him go from that, like, dickhead.
Yeah.
And not, like, kind of, like, gawky looking.
Yeah.
Or not attractive, whatever, you're sensible. And then he just goes into, like, leading man, and you're like, this dude can act.
Oh, my gosh.
It's really funny, that transition.
And he's so just, like, rubbery and weird in his early roles, and he kind of, like, dials it in as time goes on. But you still know that, like, that kid's still in there, like, somewhere bouncing around off the walls. Near Dark in 87, Brain Dead in 90, Navy Seals in 90.
Really? That was the one with Charlie Sheen, right?
Predator 2 in 90, The Dark Backwards in 91, Trespass in 92.
I remember that.
Trespass?
Mm-mm.
Oh, you'd love Trespass.
All right.
Yeah, you gotta see that one. William Sadler is really good. True Lies in 94.
He's so funny in that.
And then it's just the hits from there on. I mean, it's like, it's ridiculous. Laura Flynn Boyle did Poltergeist 3 in 88, Dead Poets Society in 89, although I think she was cut from that. Dark Backward in 91, Twin Peaks 89 to 91, Mobsters in 91, Wayne's World in 92, Threesome 1994.
Wayne's World, I forgot. She's Stacy, huh?
Yeah.
That's right.
I love it when we hit like movies that you're really, that you know really well, because you know the characters' names, and not many people do. They'll just be like, oh, she was in that. But you're like, oh, that's Stacy.
Yep, she certainly was.
James Caan, he did a lot of work, so we're just going to name a few.
The Program was right around there.
Yeah.
That's like one of my favorite movies. Doesn't hold up.
Right.
Well, but fucking rules. Yeah.
Alien Nation in 88. You remember that?
I do remember.
What was your big takeaway?
Well, they had
from that
the spotted heads.
The spotted heads.
That was my. That was the, like what I took away.
Only thing I took away is their testicles were in their armpits.
Wasn't it a TV show too?
Later, yeah. I was just like, why was their testicles in the armpits?
Who knows? I don't know why they're where they're at right now on people. When you think about it, you're like, I guess they're in the middle of our body.
Right.
So that would, they're the most guarded. But I'm like, they could be anywhere. It'd just be
really
crazy.
For how I feel about armpits, it makes more sense to put them there.
Yeah. I mean, whatever. They'd be safer.
I mean, I guess guys would be mad that like to wear tank tops.
Well, then we'd solve that problem.
And weightlifting would be really strange because
basketball would be different.
Oh my gosh, yeah, slam dunk. And
anything
you'd be like, oh.
serving with tennis would be different.
That's a long list. James Caan did Dick Tracy in 90, Misery in 90, Dark Backwards in 91.
It's funny, he's got a lot more hits on there.
Yeah, just... For the Boys in 91 with Bette Midler. So in the middle of that is the Dark Backwards.
This seems like a favor from him.
Crazy. I don't know. He did it for scale. That's all I know about him. He showed up and everyone was like shocked that he was such a pro that everyone was sort of, I think, stepped up their game. And it was one of those things where I know people didn't leave the set when they weren't in a scene. They stayed to watch James work.
I'd stick around for anything he was doing. It'd be sick.
Exactly. And then, Honeymoon in Vegas in 1992. Wayne Newton was supposed to be a cameo in this. And then he wanted to play the scummy agent so bad he did it for no pay and rented his own trailer.
It'd be funny to be like, he wasn't a movie star. He was he was a Las Vegas personality, and
absolutely.
So I'm sure he's just like, no, I want to. Like I was saying about this album, like I want something that's out there.
Yeah,
I did. That
yeah,
you can't take away.
Bring
you know?
Bring your friends in.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, it would be if I had the money. I'd hit up all kinds of like, hey, let me be in this skateboard movie. Any skateboard movie. Just let me be in one.
Oh, we'll get to something along those lines. Billy Bob Thornton is in this movie as a patron in Sloppy's, but he's uncredited.
Man, that's so funny to think about.
The director's mom is in the film as a seamstress. His grandmother is the lady in bandages in the waiting room. His sister is the cigarette girl. And his grandfather is a man of a million faces.
See, I feel like not enough people dive into the IMDb like trivia. It's so fun when you get on there and just start going through all this random shit. I don't think this is on IMDb, but Zach Toscani was telling me that in Office Space, when Smikowski backs out of his driveway and gets hit, it's Chuck Norris's kid driving the truck.
What?
Because he called. He's like, hey, I guess he was in Texas. And he's like, I'll come up. I want to do that part and I'll drive the truck. So he's the one driving the truck who hits the car.
Does he get out and say, you just got Truck Norris'd?
I haven't thought of that. Oh. Old Truck Norris?
Yeah, Truck Norris.
That's rad.
I did. Do you ever make the the Buck Norris joke?
Okay. Yeah, on occasion.
I thought, because when you're talking about doing the splits on a skateboard once on some podcast, it seemed like
Buck
that's just a no-brainer there. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if it was too low-hanging fruit.
Nothing's
you know.
Too low.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
I also wanted to mention that because it's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about this film with you, because Adam Rifkin brought in his whole family to do it, and that just seems like something, maybe not your whole family, but your family of friends and things. If you had the opportunity to make a film, I feel like that's something that Sean Jordan would do and be like, yeah,
definitely
this
would.
Person, this person, this person, all my buddies,
yes.
Everyone's in.
I feel like everybody, if they, you'd like to think everybody would. But yeah, I mean, like when Ian was on Corden this last time, we were all in the green room and we all just stood like it was a prom photo.
Yeah.
And it was just so funny. We're like, yeah, I don't see anything, any world where I wouldn't want to put my friends
right.
in. Right. Because they've all done it for me. Like, again, that's the only reason that I live in LA, that I even do stand up anymore, was because of Doug Benson. Like he was like, move, leave Sioux Falls. So I left, and then
really,
and then he's like, wherever you go, I will do whatever I can to help. And so I got to Portland, and I opened for him like every show that he did here.
Wow.
Started doing his podcast a bunch, and like that's.
I was so excited to hear you on the podcast. You're great on it, by the way. The Doug
Thanks,
Benson.
Man. Well, because it's fun. I love talking about movies. It's fun.
Yeah, it is. But you know, some I don't know translates really well.
Yeah.
The animator, there's one animated segment, I'm sure you remember it, is Dan Provenmire. He worked on and storyboarded Rocko's Modern Life, Hey Arnold, Rugrats, Cat Dog, Ren and Stimpy, and TMNT.
All of that is so much better than this movie.
Yes.
That's, wow.
Yeah. That when the second I saw the animated sequence, I was like, in the commentary, they better say who did that. And they of course do, which is amazing. The practical effects were done by Tony Gardner, who worked on Hocus Pocus, Cabin Boy, Batman and Robin, The Rock, all the Jackass films, There's Something About Mary, Smoking Aces, and Zombieland.
I love most of those.
That's just to make the arm in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Smokin' Ace is about the only clunker in the... It's not really a clunker, but it's just the only one I don't really like out of all of his work.
I'm sure he feels indifferent about the arm work he did for this film. At the time of this recording, you can find The Dark Backwards on DVD, and it looks beautiful. You can also stream it on Amazon Prime, and of course rent it, if in Portland, at Movie Madness.
I miss video stores.
The entire synopsis for this film is: life changes for a garbage man would-be comic when a third arm starts growing out of his back, period. End of story. That's all you need to know.
They act like it says, you have an arm. I don't trust a man with an arm. Or what's, I don't trust a man with three hands.
I don't, yeah, yeah. Yep, that's what she, I mean, it's a great line.
I don't either.
But why would you?
I've never met one, but.
The title comes from the new Shakespeare play, The Tempest. And Adam Rifkin pointed inside the book, and it said Dark Backward, and he said, that's the title.
Dog.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Which I spent years of my life thinking, like, what could that mean? Like, it's out of his back, and it's a cool title. Yeah, it works really well, I guess. And the last thing I'll nerd out and say is that the credits in the beginning, where it's just pages of a book turning, the hand turning the pages is David Silverman, who directed numerous episodes of The Simpsons.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
Like, see, everybody's got credits in this
fun
thing.
Little stuff.
Yeah.
That is cool.
Pretty crazy. In the film starts off, Judd's very, very sweaty. in your professional, let's say, journey in stand-up, do you feel especially sweaty up there? Or does it change from place to place to place?
I used to sweat.
Yeah.
A ton. So the first nerves. Time... I don't know what it was. Yeah, when I started, it was nerves. The first time I went up, I remember this. I had on, it was when those army shirts were cool. Even for kids who weren't in the army, like skaters wore those army shirts right. from the surplus stores. They were like $2. So I had on a gray army shirt, and I didn't even think, but I was like, so I sweat, and somehow it went above my armpits. So I think it just like saturated the shirt so much that it was like it soaked up above.
That is amazing.
And I just went up, and I was like, well, fuck, I got to go up. And after that.
This was the first time?
Very first time I went up. It was a comedy contest, so
wait.
We didn't have open mics.
Okay.
We didn't. There wasn't such a thing in Sioux Falls. So okay. There was a comedy contest on the radio, and my friend at work was like, you should do that. You say, you know, because I talked about it for a while, like I could do stand-up. So and I did, and I sucked, but, you know, you keep going. But yeah, I used to sweat. I kind of had a problem for a while. I almost went and got, like, medicated deodorant because I was like, sure. This can't be how it is.
Losing too much water.
Dog. And then, but you're just like, I feel it dripping, and I'm like, this is crazy. Nobody else is sweating like this. Then it just stopped. So it doesn't really happen anymore. It'll happen like sometimes at like Rev Hall or a big theater when there's like a spotlight, you'll sweat.
Sure.
Just because you're hot, but it's not nerves.
What about the recording of an album?
No, I was something. I remember something where I was like, this is weird. Like I had some sweat on my back or something.
Mm-hmm.
But... that went away in like 2 or 3 minutes.
Sure.
Just worried about like getting the mic out of the stand.
Yeah.
One of those things like has to go well. But then even like the label was like, if you fuck up, just say you fucked up and then tell the crowd, be honest with them. And I did once.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, so act like you didn't just hear me say that. And it went well because they're like, yeah, we're with you. We're all on a journey.
For something like that, did you record 2 nights or was it 1 night?
2 shows, 1 night.
2 shows, 1 night.
Yeah.
That was another option.
It was pretty much... we just used the second show. The first one was like,
sure.
I kicked it around, but you know, we're just like, yeah, let's use the whole second show. It was good. It was a lot more loose.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, man.
The
sweating has gone away though, thankfully.
That's good.
Now I can wear gray again.
Oh, finally. Bill Paxton's dad is an extra in the first scene, and the whole club is lit like the waiting room in Beetlejuice, which a lot of this movie is. Which is
it looks.
Pretty
that's
strange.
What I was. It does look like that.
It feels otherworldly, which is what I mean when I said, like, it's its own... they really created their own sort of universe.
You know what
situation.
Else it felt like was Hobo with a Shotgun.
Yeah.
There were, like, little parts of it where I'm like, that's... and even Wayne Newton looks like the guy...
Rucker Hauer?
He looks... no, not like Rucker Hauer, but the villain Hobo with a Shotgun. I don't know who it is, but they just... they seem smarmy. They both seem real smarmy. And I'm like, this is... yeah, so it did remind me of that a lot.
That's true. That's a good point. In the very beginning, Judd's jokes are not very polished, but he's dedicated to it.
You gotta.
And he's really trying. So it's a great start for his character because you kind of want him to succeed.
Rooting for him.
Yeah.
And he's so innocent seeming.
Yeah.
And he looks scared.
And he's trying to find his voice. And for some people, like, say, Bobcat Goldthwait, where it's like a fully created persona thing.
It's the first comic I ever saw.
Really?
First and only stand-up show I ever went to before I started was Bobcat Goldthwait.
Whoa.
Yeah.
This is after he dropped the voice, though.
Yeah, he was just trying to be himself, like normal, yeah. But he still, his voice was kind of
messed up because of that.
Yeah, like, of that's part of his voice. But yeah, I saw, my friends were like, let's go see Bobcat because they love Shakes the Clown.
Yeah.
And so we went and I saw the host and I was like, I should do stand up. I could do that. It was a lot harder than I thought.
Sure.
But that was the, yeah, Bobcat and this dude Josh got me in.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So that's what I was getting to. In finding your voice, mm-hmm. like, was it just something natural? Like, you're just telling your truth, or were you, like, embellishing stories, or how did you even begin to start to be like, this is what I want to do in front of strangers?
It didn't really start till I moved here. I did it in Sioux Falls, mm-hmm. but it wasn't, I just was so bad. There was nobody around. I didn't live with anybody else who did stand-up. There were a couple kids in town who did it,
yeah.
but we didn't, like, we weren't grinding like they do, like you do here, like
Chicago,
a different city.
And,
yeah, you were just like, we had the club, we'd do our 10 minutes, and then, you know, I'd get hammered, and then whatever. It was just that. I did the same 10 minutes for like 4 years.
Yeah.
And then I moved here, and I was like, oh my gosh, people work, and there's open mics. You do stand up every night in front of different crowds. So started when I got here. And then I feel like all the comics that you see, it's just like a big stew.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you start to find who you are. Because for a while, I was like, I want to be Tommy John again. And then I wanted to be Brendan Walsh. And then I wanted to be Beth Stelling.
Right.
Just because you watch them and you're like, they're amazing.
Yeah.
And then you just figure out like little pieces of everyone and that turns into you. And then you start talking about more personal stuff I did. It helps, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Who the fuck knows? I probably still haven't figured it out.
But that's how many years have you been doing stand-up, though?
A long time. Like 13 14 years. Something in there.
Yeah. I just think it's important. For a lot of these interviews, I think it's just important for people to hear the length of time that people have worked on the things that they do. It's just, we live in a time where we see pictures of Instagram of like a style of someone's life, but we don't ever see the story and the work that it takes to get there because no one, I guess, wants to look at those pictures of someone sweating up their armpit.
I'd want to look at those pictures.
It's on Instagram.
And laugh at that kid.
It's hashtag sweat up armpit.
I mean, you never think of it as what you're, like, work, though. You never, like, when I started, you never think you're going to end up doing that.
Right.
Because it sounds ridiculous. And then you end up, you know, a podcast is what I do. That's basically what I do now. I'd say, because that's how I make money. I don't make any money doing stand-up, really, you know? So, who the fuck ever would have thought that would happen? It's just funny how things work out. Like,
no, it's great.
Yeah.
In the film, though, Judd's audience, they aren't being aggressive. And they seem like they're trying to listen, but they're just not connecting with him. Is that worse than like a crowd that's just talking, one that's quiet, but there's just no response?
It's tricky. Because, if people are talking, I'll get buck with them. Like,
yeah.
If people want to talk and get rowdy, I can handle that. Like, just pick someone and talk shit to them. I don't like it because it ends up people get mad. But it's fun to just poke. If people are just sitting there talking and they want you to engage and it's that kind of a show, whatever. I'll do it. I'm not mean. I just like talking. So I can do that. People are just quiet sitting there and they don't get it. You're like, can't really make you get it.
Yeah.
There's nothing.
But you have to fill your time, right?
You have to fill your
I mean,
I've sat there for 40 minutes, especially those corporate gigs where like, hey, Fred Meyer Christmas party, 300 people. And you're like, they don't want to sit there. They want to get drunk.
Yeah.
That's what they get. They'd rather have you give them all $20 at the bar.
Yes.
Instead of pay a comic $1,000 to do 45 minutes. Nobody wants to see that.
Right.
And you're going to do it. Of course. I'm like, sure.
Yeah.
I'll go up there and eat shit for 45 minutes. Yeah. But I've definitely done that.
Glenda's always late.
Seriously. They're like, there's the boss. Make fun of him. You're like, I didn't write jokes about your boss.
Yeah.
I've never met him. I don't know. Never met them. I have no idea what to talk about. It's just those corporate shows, all of them are like that. I did a show for Home Depot and they passed out everyone's bonus checks while I was doing stand up. And they're all sitting there like,
God.
They didn't want to open the envelopes. And I'm like, open those. You know, cheer up. Get happy.
You just hear quiet ripping of the envelope. Just
because they wanted to see what they got. And I'm like, open them up.
I would want to know. Did they tell you?
I didn't ask them, but they were a lot better crowd after
they opened
them.
They were pretty happy.
Mm-hmm.
In the film, Bill Paxton is an exuberant best friend. You have what seems to be like a nice clutch of best friends. You mentioned Ian, of course.
Yeah.
But you've got other people now, David and Zach.
David, Mike, Harper. I mean, it's such a nice... I'm real lucky like that. We're all real lucky like that.
Yeah. Because
I have that in South Dakota. I have it in Portland. and I have it in Los Angeles. Granted, most of the Los Angeles are from Portland.
Right.
But, you know, like Malloy, I never met Malloy before then, really, or David, or Harper, or, you know. So, yeah. I mean, there's a ton of people. Bree Pruitt, but you, and then I get to come back to Portland, and I have some kids that, like, from South Dakota that I've known. We were talking about this yesterday. We went to that retro gaming place. It's like Killingsworth and Deacon. Doesn't matter. Anyway, we're playing Nintendo last night.
Yeah.
And this kid, Troy, I've known him since I'm 15, and now I'm 37. So it's like, a lot of people don't have that. And I have about 30, 40 people I've known since high school that I'm still best friends with.
That's so cool.
Yeah. And that's why, like, I always say my friends are my family, because I have my family. They rule. But we were just never that kind of family. We were never, sure, like, super close, except for me and my mom. But that was about it. You know, yeah. So my friends have always been my family, so I'm very lucky to have all kinds of exuberant best friends. They rule.
That is awesome.
Yeah, man.
Worst performance scenario, bridal party or open mic night at Applebee's?
I've done bridal party, dude. They're tricky. So I had to do a show at an Applebee's one time,
yep,
and they didn't tell them there was going to be a stand-up show. So they just went and set a mic up. It was like 6 p.m. on a Wednesday. In the bar, families, there was like a softball team in there. They didn't say. They just went up and they're like, all right, comedy show starts. And I had to go up and host.
Oh.
It was horrible because you're messing up everyone's dinner. It's not their fault.
Right.
They chose to go. They didn't know. Nobody had any idea.
Ambushed.
Yeah. I can't stand that.
That's the worst.
Then like a bachelorette party or a bachelor, but it's not fair just to say a bachelor. Like,
that's all I've experienced, so that's all that I...
Bachelor are just... They're both equal. Yeah. They can both be equally as obnoxious.
Just shouting, make it about me!
Yeah, but so in that case, if you hire a comic to do your party, that's different.
Yes.
It's like Ian, Shane, and I did... I'll remember this forever. We did a bachelor party at the Brody for like 8 dudes.
Whoa.
The Brody is a little theater in Portland. It's actually not around anymore. I think it's Kickstand now. I think Kickstand. Anyway, little like black box theater, but there was about 8 or 9 dudes in there. It was 2 p.m. on a Saturday, and Ian, Shane, and I went in, and we did stand up. And those guys, one of them came to our shows at Rev Hall last in like March or August or something. And he's like, hey, it was my bachelor party. You guys, we still talk about that. And I'm like, man, so it can be really good.
Yeah.
Most of the time it's not.
Sure.
But it can be. So that one was.
Okay.
So I guess I'm going to say Applebee's is worse.
Right. That makes sense. In the film, while they both want to be famous performers, they have a day job, which is that they are garbage men. Not very good at being garbage
you
men.
You got it. That's what a lot of people... You have to have a day job. It's not, you know...
Yeah.
There's no shame in that.
Do you still have a day
job? I do. I did as of like 3 days ago. It's on the way out. I hope not. I'll keep it as long as I can.
Okay.
My thing, and this is the thing with a lot of musicians, whatever.
Yeah.
They think it's not real if they do something during the day. And I'm like, it is, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I called myself a skateboarder my whole life. I didn't make any money skateboarding.
Sure.
You're just a skateboarder, you know? Like you can be a comedian and you can say like, yeah, I'm a comic. And you can still also work at a call center or a Subway or a coffee shop. Or you can be an architect. I mean, I know people that have full-on careers that also want to do stand-up.
That's amazing.
I mean, right now I have a job. I'll have it as long as I can.
Yeah.
If they fire me, I'll get another one. I mean, I'll always get jobs until, stand up's doing it.
Yeah.
Like, well, I'm always going to look for jobs.
Next album, just call it I'll Always Get Jobs.
Yeah, seriously?
Oh, I'll Always Get Jobs.
I'm interested. I haven't asked how many copies that sold. I'm interested because I don't want to hear like 20.
Right.
Like, I didn't want to hit them up and be like,
it's
going to
be more than 20 for sure.
It is, but I don't know what number in my head. I'm like, what number do I want it to be? Because if 20 people give a shit about what you're doing, that's still pretty cool.
Sure.
So, yeah. Anyway, so that'll be the one that'll be fun to figure out.
That's so exciting. Just the idea that someone is listening to your voice at any given point.
Really weird.
Whether it's the podcast or the album, like, or clips. I looked at there was one working clip on your website, which I looked at.
God, there's only one where
ones, they weren't live. They didn't work. Lame. The links had died. But the one that was quite enjoyable. So.
Boy, that's completely my fault, too. People will be like, hey, man, it's June. It's not last year June. You're not going to be in Tallahassee. And I'm like, oh, I haven't updated my website in a year.
Well,
my fault.
It's just stuff just falls by the wayside.
I'll do it today. I'm going to go to the hotel. I'm going to do it today.
There you go. In the film, we see a billboard for squeezable bacon, and I know that you enjoy a variety of foods.
Dog.
Would you be into some squeezable bacon?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, perfect.
I don't see any huge difference between that and, like, Bacon Ranch. It's just more bacon. Less than ranch. It is ranch, yeah. You know? I think that sounds great. That I mean, perfect. I wouldn't, like, pour it into my mouth, but I'd put it on sandwiches and
okay.
stuff.
Okay. Perfect.
I think a lot of people would behind closed doors. They wouldn't admit it.
That's true.
But yeah. I will.
Blumps is the brand in the movie that makes everything, which is always fun because even the accordion Bill Paxton wears has Blumps
it's
on
like
it.
It's like their Kroger.
Yes, it is. It's perfectly in line with the Kroger. Bill Paxton eats gross things throughout this film. the grossest being the chicken scene, which is actually oatmeal that they molded to the chicken bone and painted with baby food. And in the movie, in the commentary, he talks about how it wasn't the taste of it, but the texture, because his brain was reading chicken, mm-hmm. and then his mouth was reading the texture of the oatmeal.
That's the thing. Baby food is so... It's not gross, but the texture is yeah. disgusting. We're not baby. I'm not a baby.
Yeah, and so your brain is like, no, this solid food shouldn't be this mealy liquid.
That was what it was like with green and purple ketchup. You remember those?
No.
They had green and purple ketchup for a while, and I could not do it. Because you just see green or purple on your hot dog, and you're like, that's wild.
But green, like relish, would make sense to me, but the purple...
Just didn't. Yeah. I couldn't do either one of them. And they tasted just like ketchup. It was ketchup. It was just green ketchup.
So, where's your favorite wings?
Fire in the Mountain. Perfect. For sure. It's well a done. Portland staple.
There it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Judd Nelson tells a cab joke in the movie to a friend, and it kills. I mean, most things kill with Bill Paxton in the movie, but then he goes to take it to the stage, and it does not work. Do you ever have experiences like that with things that, say, come out in a conversation, and then you get up on stage, and you're like, that's weird. This went really well.
All the time.
Yeah.
I mean, because that's why a podcast is so much easier, because you just sit around and that all comes out.
That's what it is.
When you're doing stand-up, you have to, you don't have the other side of that conversation, so you have to invent that or make the audience see that.
Right.
Like, I was talking to my girlfriend the other day about, I walked up on a skunk one time, and I talked to the skunk. It was just on some stairs, and I talked to it like I would talk if someone had just pulled a gun on me. Yeah. It's funny to talk about in conversation. She's like, you should do that. And I go, I might be able to, but they're not going to laugh like you're laughing.
Right. Because
we're just sitting in the car on the way to the grocery store. Mm-hmm. So this is just some funny shit we're saying.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's tons of it. Unless you're like a writer, like someone like, I don't know, like Ian or somebody who's really good at writing.
Sure.
I'm really not. So I work a lot of stuff out on stage. A lot of clunkers before they... Before
you're
they turn into good
polishing
bits.
Up the bits, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't know it tonight, but they're going to get a lot of clunkers. That's what this album coming out. You're like, well, got to get a new hour somehow. So.
And that brings me to the next question. You just sort of answered it. How you work on a joke? It's all just on stage in front of people.
Mostly. I mean, you know, I the way that I do it, I write it. I might try to sneak things into conversation sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes you tweet just a little premise, like see if anybody thinks it's funny on Twitter. And then, yeah, just kind of go. I've found, for me personally, that if I put myself in a corner on stage, you have to think of something funny. Otherwise, you're going to look stupid.
Yes.
So 70% of the time that works. You think of something funny.
Right.
I do not like it when people say that was new. I really try to not say that, because that's a laugh that you get. But it's not fair, because that's not going to be part of the joke.
Right.
So a lot of times people do something like, well, never doing that again. Or that was, I guess, enough for the new stuff. And you're like, don't do that.
You got
it. If you didn't think of a punchline, you got to sit in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, for me, that's how I learn. I'm like, okay, you don't want that feeling again.
That's great. It's a natural motivator.
Yep. Because I just can't, I mean, I try to sit and write, and a lot of people do, and I'm not one of those people that's going to say, like, I go write for 4 hours a day. I don't think most people do. I think they say they do.
Yeah. But
I think most people, I can write for like an hour, and it's really just writing ideas or organizing things, but not a lot of it's like, set up punch.
Say this, and then this is the thing, and then they react. Oh, mm-hmm. lots of clapping.
I mean, that's what open mics. I mean, that's what that was the best thing about Portland. And there's so many open mics, and the scene is so killer that you could. And the comics are also supportive that they get it. No one's gonna get pissed at you,
right?
If it's not funny, you just go work it out.
That would be great if they were just like, "You're not funny.
Get out of here, bro."
No.
No, I went to one at the Lamp the other night, and it was so... It's just... I forget, because it's not like that in Los Angeles. It's a little more cutthroat, and people aren't as supportive, because they all want... You're there. Like, you want...
Right.
You don't want anyone else to do... It feels like nobody wants anyone to do that great, because it's harder for them.
Right.
But here, everybody's in it together. They're like, yeah, go up. We'll be supportive. Might not die laughing, but it'll be, you know, it'll be fun.
I like that. I like that the community aspect of things, because I think our brains try to always make things like it's a competition and there's only one spot for whatever. And like we, you know, have a hot sauce company, and there's like
an amazing hot sauce company, by the way.
Thank you. There's like 20 hot sauce families in Portland, right?
Really?
So yeah.
I didn't know that.
There's a lot of us, and so we invited everyone over for a potluck, and the only caveat was like, you gotta make a dish with someone else's sauce. And so 15 Man. Families showed up here, all their kids played together.
That's so sick.
And you know, the great thing about this, I'm sure you'd like this part, is that then everybody, you know, left at the end, and we had everyone's sauce bottles.
Dude, it's my favorite. We have our whole counter is filled with hot sauce.
Yeah.
I fucking love it.
A part of that's I shipped a bunch to you guys.
Yeah.
But every time you guys mentioned hot sauce on the podcast, I'm like, oh, they're going to get so much hot sauce.
It's rad. It's, dude, it's so good. It's honestly, it's the only one that gets like fully used.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them are like people have sent them to us and it's all fantastic, but some are just like crazy hot.
Yeah.
And you're like,
yeah,
I'm not going to.
Everyone's got their own different thing they're doing.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's super hot.
Gosh, it really is.
Yeah.
And I'm past the point where I'm being like, oh no, I love it.
Yeah.
I like hot stuff, but I don't like it to
what am I trying
wreck
to prove?
My day. Seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Which I do have to say while we're on the subject, if you do make something creative, reach out to the people that you appreciate and like that are making things and offer to thank them with the cool thing that you make. I think it feels great for the person that makes the thing. It's always nice to receive free stuff. So I just, I love to do that for anyone I appreciate. I'm like, hey, we do this thing. If we could send it to you, make us feel good. And most of the time people are up to it.
So. Yeah. I mean, that you guys were probably the first people that ever sent us anything. And it was the first time I was like, oh man, cool.
I'm going to get free stuff.
People... Not even that. I mean, it was dope.
Yeah.
But just the fact that anybody gives a shit
is
always cool.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's cool that you guys put shine on that. So, like, you get the Chislik license plate or whatever thing, you know? And, like,
I certainly.
And then people get to see
got a
that.
A whole bag full of those. That's
like,
right.
They're like, I did that or whatever, you know? Or just get excited. We live in a world where people are reaching out and supporting each other.
And it's so easy.
You know, it's just awesome. Let's see. We covered the cam thing. Oh, yes. I know in the scenes in the film, it takes place in a nightclub, but at comedy clubs, there's sort of an order to things, and I just wanted to touch on that because a lot of people might not know that there's an opener, a feature, a middle, a sweet chunk, a dill, a garlic, a burger slicer, a headline. I'm just kidding. Some of these are pickle shapes. And
on a sesame seed
flavors.
Bun.
Yes. But what is the sort of structure, for instance, tonight when you go, you're a feature?
Yep. So it'll be host, feature, headliner. That's usually like the basic... comedy club. Sometimes there'll be like a guest set. A lot of times anymore, there's a guest set.
Okay.
A lot of times the headliner brings their own feature, which is a change.
Mm-hmm.
It used to just be like if you lived in town or like you could just get booked as a feature and not know the headliner, but there's just so many comedians that a lot of these headliners, you get lonely on the road. You want like one of your friends there. So they'll bring, and someone also that they're comfortable with.
Yes.
Unfortunately, gosh, you just hear these stories and it's about women a lot where the feature was a dick as some dude who was a dick or like talking down to him or hit on him. And you're like, come on, man, that's the world we live in. So people just want someone they're comfortable with, someone that they can chill with during the day.
Yeah.
So anyway, host, feature, headliner, a lot of time there's a guest set. And then there's like showcase shows that you do at like bars and stuff. That'll be like 8 or 9 comics all doing 10 minutes.
Oh yeah. So you do Faded.
Mm-hmm.
What's the structure for that?
That's like what it is. We give like 4 comics a longer set, like 15 minutes, because there's not really a lot of those in LA.
Yeah.
It's all like 6-7 running a TV set.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to give people longer sets and then like 3 or 4 guest sets. So 3 or 4 5-minute sets if somebody does need to run something for TV. And then, one of us will go up. Otherwise, we're just kind of chilling. It's fun, man. It's like this place, the Blue Rooster that Malloy found, and it's just like a little clubhouse we get to go to every Friday, have all of our friends come and do stand-up. They just let us do it ourselves.
As a performer, do you get free beer or whiskey?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
I mean, we, technically we go buy it, but
Okay,
then
great.
I get to drink it for free.
Yeah, when I used to DJ, that was, like, my favorite thing. Is like, I mean, you get paid, but, like, the free drinks was, like, that was the best.
Sometimes you don't get paid. I mean, you never get paid in L.A.
Sure.
You actually don't get free anything in Los Angeles because it's L.A. But here, that was one of the best things. Like, you always got
broke off
a couple bucks.
Yeah.
Always got, like... There's a show at Eastburn, Barbara gives you $20 at the bar, and they never keep track.
Right.
And then you get paid a little bit.
Yeah.
It's like, man.
That's awesome. In the film, the talent agent comes to see Judd, and that's his big break. Have you ever had the pressure of something like knowing that someone was coming to something, and you're like,
unfortunately, no, not really. I mean, great. It would be awesome. I'd love it, because then it could be a break.
It just makes me nervous even thinking about like these gatekeepers and people that like go around and they either see something in you or they don't. And if they don't, like, what's your evening going to look like then? Because you're like, what did they not see in me? Like, am I not a specific flavor of something? Or
it happens. I mean, I've never had a manager or an agent or anything. Yeah. Not by my choice. I'd love it. But no one's ever, because you do these festivals and they do. Like, all the execs go around from show to show and they check out, like, whoever the hot person is. Mm-hmm. And I've been on plenty of those shows and got a couple taps, like emails and things, and had some meetings, but nothing really ever took off. But then I look at We Do This Podcast, which is the most fun thing I've ever been a part of, and that is doing great. So you can do it without getting tapped.
Which
you know?
Is even better.
Yeah.
Did any of that irritate you when you were doing those things? Or were you just like, I'm just going to keep doing my thing? Or
if you do it, like it all irritates you in the way that anything does. Like, of course, when you see all your friends moving forward and getting like all these late night spots, of course you want it. But if you get mad about that, then you're doing it for the wrong reason. Yeah. Like, you should...
That's great.
What I've always said is you should be stoked for your friends, because someone's going to be the voice of Comedy Central. Sure. Why not have it be David? Like, that would be...
So that's a real thing?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know if you guys were just joking or not, because I know it was Kyle before.
It was, and now it's David.
Whoa!
Or, like, if, you know, if you someone... Because, you know, everyone's like... They'll tell you, be like, yeah, I got Kimmel. And if there's a part of you that gets mad, that's crazy. You should be thrilled.
Yeah.
Because, if I was a lawyer... Right? And one of my friends told me they were on Kimmel. Would I be anything but excited? Because I wouldn't want it. You know, it's not what you're doing. So that should be the feeling that you let take yourself over, is being happy for your friends.
Unless you're a lawyer by day and a stand-up comedian at night.
Right. No, I always try to be as stoked as I can. I mean, because I get to... It's hard to look at where you're at.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people look up and they're like, well, I'd like to be doing what you're doing.
Sure.
And I'm like, yeah, I remember I was doing open mics and I had just started at some point. So yeah, I'm always stoked about where I'm at.
Yeah, that's awesome. So now we reached a point in the film where Judd has a tiny hand on his back.
Yeah.
And the doctor, played by James Caan, puts a Band-Aid on it, which is a beautiful little image. James Caan's amazing in this film. I couldn't believe he was in it. And we also...
It is crazy.
It's so crazy. And they all realize that it's crazy, which is even weirder. Laura Flynn Boyle delivers the poetic line, "I can't love a man with three hands," which has got to be one of the best written lines in the film. And then Bill Paxton has an orgy with three women of weight, I'll say.
Yeah.
One of which played Martha Dumptruck in Heathers, and the other two were adult actresses.
God. Oh, really? Were they really?
Yeah. And so the part where he jumps naked into all of them, one of them actually tries to perform...
Like, actually get it done?
...fellatio on him, and the director didn't call cut right away, and Bill Paxton got really, really worried by the whole situation.
Would be crazy. I mean, there was that movie where Chloe Savini really blew a dude, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's pretty wild to think, like, that's just going down in a movie.
What was that, Brown Bunny?
I can't remember. Yeah, it wasn't old. It was
Brown Bunny.
Okay, yeah.
There's not a lot for that movie, which I think is maybe why that ending happened, because he was like, someone will watch it now.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. Fooled me. Then they take the ladies to see Marty, and the arm is fully grown, and they start to laugh at the fact that he has this arm. And it's kind of like the things that make us funny are the things that make us different from each other.
Sure.
Which is like, I mean, if all the stand-ups were exactly the same and got up, I mean, I would probably watch one set.
What was going on for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at, because the pendulum's swinging pretty hard right now, and as it should be, like, for diversity. But you look for a long time, it was just like goofy, straight white dudes.
Yep.
And you're like, this was a bummer.
Yeah.
Because nobody else had anything to identify with. And mm-hmm. I'm thrilled it's going the way it's going.
Yeah.
But yeah, for a long time, they were all the same.
Right. That is true. Ugh.
Like, eerily the same.
Yeah. So then he gets fired, and a comedian with the exact same joke premise, but is younger, takes the job, and he gets twice the pay, and that young man is Adam Rifkin, the director.
So, oh, there it is.
Yeah.
Comes full circle.
Full circle. Then one of my favorite parts in the movie is Judd Nelson has a nightmare. And Laura Flynn Boyle comes out of the ocean, and he doesn't have the arm, and he's, like, gonna run to her, and then it goes back, and he's just wearing, like, 50 arms. And then it's just this super weird, surreal thing. I don't know how they did it exactly. It's pretty amazing. And then the next scene we have is in the Talent Scout Agency. And there's a woman, it's actually a man as a barbarian, and she's playing a xylophone that's actually little people. And the person...
Yeah, yeah, they're in their, like, sailor...
Yes. Mm-hmm. And on the far right is Tony Cox, who is the little person in Bad Santa, which means technically this movie is the first film...
Where Billy Bob and him met?
There it is. But they didn't meet. But they're both in the same film.
It's funny. That's a fun thing to go down. Like, we just did it with Tom Hanks, where you're like, man, him and Gary Sinise have been in a lot of movies together.
Which has got to be great.
A lot of ridiculously good movies together, you know?
Because, like, a lot of times actors will be in a film with someone, and then they'll never see that person again.
Yeah.
And in our minds, we're like, they're best friends because they're friends in the movie, but they've never talked again.
They never do anything. I mean, what, are they going to go to lunch in L.A.? That doesn't happen. I don't think. I mean, they might go with, like, you know. Keanu Reeves might go with, like, a girlfriend or his family, but he's not going to go out to eat with Lawrence Fishburne, I don't think, you know?
That would be awesome.
It really would be if you just saw those two, like, splitting a burger or something.
In sunglasses and long coats. Like, are they filming Matrix 4 here? That's all I'd want to do if I was a famous person, is just kind of, I like creating a little whimsical joy. I don't like pranks, mean-spirited things, but things that just create a little wonder.
Sure.
I like that a lot.
I love it. There was, I think it was on Kimmel, but Drake dressed up like he wasn't Drake and interviewed a bunch of people about the new Drake album.
Oh, no.
Like, half the people said it sucked.
Yeah.
And he's just like, yeah, yeah, totally. And then the other half loved it, and he would just kind of start rapping, and you'd get to see him and be like,
oh,
no.
Oh, my god.
It's just so, like, I would love to do something like that.
That'd be so good.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be famous until right now, and now I want to be Canadian and make R&B hip hop.
Yeah.
There's still a chance.
No, there's not. Market's cornered.
Ah, oh, dang it.
Unless the Raptors win tonight, then he might just go full on into owning a team. Because they are playing.
Okay, good. Thanks. So then Judd Nelson's jokes aren't working. So then Bill goes to Laura and says, look how he treated you, growing an arm out of his back. Is that any way to treat a lady?
That's hilarious.
Which is pretty magical. And then we get King Moody. There's a big variety show. King Moody's the host. King Moody was Ronald McDonald in the commercials from 1975 to 1985.
They had commercials in 1975? Yeah. I guess, of course. You don't think about that, though.
Gosh, yeah.
Wild.
And at this point, my wife, who was not sure about this film at all, she said, the one thing about this that I like is that his jokes are still terrible, but we get to see the evolution of his performance and his jokes, which I think is a nice thing to get to see. In a film, like I said, everything's always so polished, you don't get actually see the steps of somebody. I don't know if there's videos online of people working on a joke, but I would love to see the chunks and bits that get removed.
They get taken out a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, those videos don't make it too far. Yeah. I have old DVDs. We used to record every set. So I have DVDs that I'll go through and put them out at some point, like on our Patreon page.
Yeah.
But I cringe when I watch them still.
Of course, yeah.
Because just those things, I say all the, I do this, like.
Oh, yeah.
I do that all the time, and it's hard to watch. And the jokes are so bad. But if I find one that I can, like, tolerate long enough to make sure I don't say anything terrible, then, yeah. So that's another thing.
Yeah.
I have some old jokes. I got called out when I got here for one, and I won't say it, but it was like, it was horrible.
Oh.
And it was like a body shaming joke.
Oh,
and not about me,
sure.
Which is fine to say whatever you want about
there
yourself.
There to work, yeah.
But yeah, it was about other people, and someone's like, hey, you can't do that.
Right.
And I look back now, and I'm like, you're absolutely right. I can't. Yeah. But I did, because I didn't know any better. There's another good thing about meeting a bunch of comedians, because they're like, don't do that. You sound like a prick.
Do you ever make a joke and then not do it because it reminds you of someone else's joke?
Yeah. Or you hear, like, someone does it.
Yeah.
Yeah, someone's like, hey, you know, someone else, so-and-so has a joke about that. And I'm like, well, I don't want to do it then.
Yeah.
There's enough material in the world for you to not have to do that.
Right. I had a tweet that was, you can't break a taco, you can only make a nacho.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Mitch Hedberg has a joke that is an escalator can't break, it can only become stairs. And so I was like,
sorry for the convenience.
It's too close to the same thing. Plus, I'm not a stand-up comic.
That's a really good joke, though. I'd keep it.
Thanks. I'll put it in my hour, which I'm working on right now, which brings me to my pitch for your pilot TV show.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Ready?
Yeah.
Okay.
The skateboarder?
I wrote it down.
All right.
Okay. Scene one, you're not a stand-up comedian. I think those shows have run their course now, so you're just a nice guy.
Some dude.
And you're talking to a lady, and she's like, look, Sean, you're a glass half full kind of guy. And you're like, look, I don't mean to interrupt, but I just think it's buck we have a glass at all. Mm-hmm. And then it cuts to you outside the door, and you're like, or a bowl, or a fondue, any vessel, really.
Anything.
So you're sad. She broke up with you. You hop on your skateboard. You go to the park. While trying to pull a nollie frontside hoobastank, or whatever you will.
Sure.
You almost clip a kid because he's not looking where he's going, right? And you fall and hit your head. And when you come to, kids are mocking you and ridiculing you and not being cool. So you're like, you know what? I'm going to make this park 21 and over. So you go to legislature.
A lot of them should be.
You make the park 21 and over. And then who shows up? Rodney Mullen.
There he is.
And then you're skating with Rodney Mullen. And then who would you like to skate with next?
I'd like it if Eric Costin was there.
Okay, next.
Eric Costin rules. Andrew Reynolds would be fun to skate with.
Keep going.
Wes Kremer would be pretty cool to skate with. Aishad Ware would be a fun one. Donovan Strain, who I've been talking to online a little bit, would be fun.
Ooh, that's fun.
Yeah. He's like one of the Barracks dudes who was actually like started talking to me a little bit on the internet, which is super cool. I'm like, tight.
That's got to be the coolest that like by doing the thing that you love puts you in a place where someone who's doing this other thing that you love is then, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So, turns out, you eventually come to, it was a brain trauma situation. You didn't really get to skate with the great skaters.
I didn't think that
whatnot,
I would.
But, in shooting that pilot, you get to skate with all those people.
Very nice, see?
So, even if the show doesn't work, you have this awesome thing of you skating with all of your, like, you know, idols or friends or whatever. So,
hell yeah.
So that was my pilot idea for you.
Fantastic.
Great. So I'll punch it up.
Let's take it to CAA or whoever listens to pilot pitches.
Yeah, I don't think anybody does. So then it brings us to the end of the film. The arm is gone. They lose the gimmick. Bill and Wayne take off to LA. They leave Marty. But what happens is that Marty goes on stage and he starts to make jokes about his real life and about having a third arm and losing it. And the audience starts to laugh.
They're in.
And so I think that there's actually a really nice wraparound, not the original version of the film, but in this ending, which I think kind of makes the whole film, that, you know, if we have something that's unique to our story, that we should embrace it. You know, that that's how we evolve as people and as performers. So I just wanted to...
I mean, that's... Honestly, the best stand-up to me is when people... Unless there's two kinds. There's like amazing joke writers, or there's people that just talk about deeply, personal issues.
Yeah.
But they find a way to make it funny. I talk about my dad a whole bunch. Not a lot of that's funny, but when you make it funny, it's good. People identify. And I've had people come up and say like, hey, my dad was pretty gnarly too. So it's nice to hear.
Yeah.
Anthony Lopez, he has like hanging R's. So he... does a bit about like having a speech impediment, and he had a girl come up to him crying one time after a show, like, hey, seeing you do what you do makes me feel so much better about myself and empowered her. And
that's awesome.
People identify with stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, it's like Scroobius Pip being an MC and a rapper and having a, you know, that's, and now having a podcast, it's like, oh, you just don't let anything stop you from, you know, which is pretty amazing. And last, I'll share a little story about myself. As a child, I had an imaginary friend. And my imaginary friend's name was Charlie. And he was a chef in Hawaii. He's a Japanese chef in Hawaii. Which, if you're doing the math, I created an imaginary friend.
I was going to say, pretty. you took a long walk.
Who was never around. And so my mom would be like, hey, why don't you go play? And I'd be like, I don't have anyone to play with. And she's like, what about Charlie? And I'd be like, he's at work. So, you know, sometimes we might make obstacles for ourselves.
Sure.
But you can still hopefully find the humor in those things.
Definitely.
Or get older and just tell people about that.
Yeah. Well, actually, Charlie's a real dude.
Yeah, that's true. Is there any common misconceptions about being a stand-up?
I think that always, like, you're always funny. I'm not funny most. I got my hair cut today and I didn't say a funny thing. Like that, you know. So, yeah, not always funny.
Did they ask what you do for a living?
Yeah, she was pretty cool. So okay. She's like, what are you doing in town? And I was like, I'm doing stand-up tonight. And she knew a couple comics in town.
Okay.
Like, why, you know, not cracking jokes.
She so wasn't like, tell me a joke.
No, God, she was, no, she's super cool.
Do you get that?
All the time, yeah. And what, that's a common miss because, like, those jokes don't work.
Do you do it or do you just go, not right?
I always do, but I always tell my favorite street joke of all time.
Okay.
And that's what, you know, how do you get a witch pregnant?
I give up.
You fuck her.
Nice.
It's the funniest joke I've ever heard in my whole life, but it's just some
street
joke.
That's pretty good. I had something going on with brooms, but that's way better.
But yeah, not all comics aren't funny all the time. That's what I'll say.
That's great. What's a good day like for you?
Man, I don't wake up, get some coffee, mess around on the internet, go to like the barracks, mess around, like watch the videos, go to the Thrasher website, answer whatever emails I have, and then like if there's any Twitter messages or like you want to respond to all those and like any DMs on Instagram, get all that done, get outside, maybe go on a hike or go skate.
Okay.
Just like be, again, this is like if I had my druthers, perfect day, just be outside for a while and then get like some buffalo wings for dinner then watch like a basketball game or a movie and then go to bed around like 11, tired from the day because I got out and did some stuff. So like naturally tired. Yeah.
All right.
Pretty easy to please.
And what's a bad day?
I stress a lot. So anytime there's stress, like if something, I don't know, pretty much anything can do it. But like anytime I feel overwhelmed or stressed, those are rough days. And that happens a lot in LA. Doesn't happen in Portland. That's why I love it up here so much. It's just so much more calm.
Excuse me. Is there a way that you get yourself out of feeling stressed or?
I just hang out with my friends, talk to my friends. Yeah. I mean, it's usually a pretty easy fix. And I blow things up a lot. I'm trying to work on that. Like chilling out a little bit.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's the big thing I'm working on. But I don't have a lot of bad days. Not a lot to complain about.
That's great. Do you have any advice? I'm sure you get this question a lot, and I apologize for someone interested in doing what you do.
Yeah, just do it. Do it for the right reasons. Don't ever expect to make a bunch of money or anything. If you do end up making money, it'll be a long time after you start. Probably won't be a lot. Sometimes you make enough to live. Sometimes you get rich. You know, there's some people from Portland that are rich. But most of the time, it's just going to be really hard. You have to enjoy it. And don't be afraid to have a different job.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
I mean, you have to love doing this. So make sure you love doing it.
And that brings us to the last question, my favorite question. Sean, what are your dreams like?
Like my actual dreams or like aspirations for life?
Actual dreams.
My actual dreams. I had a really, really crazy one the other night. Oh, Game of Thrones. So we were watching Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And I killed like a bunch of kids.
Oh, no.
Yeah, because I remember I ran out with a sword and I killed like a 12-year-old probably. I cut him right in half. And I woke up and I was like, that sucks.
That's terrible.
Because so many people died in those last few episodes.
Yeah, it's just in your brain.
Those were my most recent ones. I had a dream last night. So I slept on the couch at my girlfriend's house and the dog and the cat were in there on the middle floor. It was crazy hot. And the dog kept getting up and breathing and like coming on me and not coming on me, coming towards me. And I had to like push it away. So then I had a dream that I was pushing the dog away and it bit me. And then I woke up like sweating and I almost screamed because I thought the dog like bit my hand open and then it was just sleeping.
Were you like, you know what you did?
Yeah, I was just like, you don't even know, Frankers. You almost had to go around.
That's amazing. So not dreams. Anxiety dreams, not and nothing related to your profession. You're not up on the mic.
No. That's great. Not really.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Well, Sean, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for watching The Dark Backwards.
Dude, thank you for making amazing hot sauce.
Oh, you're too kind.
I'm gonna wreck it when I go home and eat lunch.
All right. Well, thanks again.
Hell yeah. Bye-bye.